News, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. Hundreds of thousands of federal government workers are facing a demand from Elon Musk that they justify their weekly job performance in writing or lose those jobs.
Federal workers have until tomorrow night to respond to the memo, but Everett Kelly, who heads the largest federal employees union, has responded, saying some federal workers won't see the memo in time because they're on approved time off. Others don't even have government emails.
We will challenge every illegal action that's taken by this administration, especially this.
Here at the White House, members of the United States Secret Service received the memo. Their job is to protect the President of the United States. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
Leaders at the FBI, the State Department, and the Defense Department are telling their workers to ignore the demand. Prayers for an ailing Pope Francis this Sunday. These from Middletown, Connecticut.
Hopefully he'll get better. You know, we'll see what happens, but we keep praying. That's all we can do.
He's fought through before. Hopefully he'll do it again.
Correspondent Seth Doan has the latest update from the Vatican.
Pope Francis remains in critical condition tonight, with blood tests revealing early signs of kidney failure. He continues to get high-flow oxygen through tubes in his nose and blood transfusions. On the encouraging side, the Vatican is saying Francis has not had another respiratory crisis since Saturday, when we learned he was in more pain than he had been.
In Germany, opposition leader Friedrich Merz's conservatives are claiming victory in the national election over Chancellor Olaf Scholz's center-left Social Democrats and with a solid showing for the far-right Alternative for Germany party. BBC's Katja Adler is in Berlin.
Politically, this is now a divided country, but most here agree everything must be done to kickstart the sluggish German economy and better control migration.
Israel is holding back the release of over 600 Palestinian prisoners slated to be traded for hostages yesterday as part of the Hamas-Israel ceasefire deal. Miriam Hirschlag reports.
Israel says it's not releasing the 602 Palestinian prisoners for now because of what it called grotesque ceremonies in which Hamas paraded Israeli hostages and coffins in front of crowds. One of those coffins contained the wrong body, another reason given for the holdup. Talks on the next phase of the ceasefire deal are frozen as Israel decides whether to go for a truce or return to fighting.
Documents obtained by CBS News show the Trump administration has prepared plans to revive a border measure known as Title 22 from the first Trump presidency. It authorizes summary expulsions of migrants on grounds they could spread diseases. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Join us for the next Midday Magazine as we kick off the week with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, Arsenic and Old Lace, and in part two, the Boys and Girls Club of Wisconsin Rapids. It's 4 to 5 on WFHR.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Some Wisconsin tribal nations are using renewable energy to reassert supremacy over their communities while creating opportunity. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Tribal nations have historically faced challenges to own and control their own electricity, even though a significant number of plant and utility infrastructure are in close proximity to reservation lands. Isaiah Ness founded Sunbear Industries after witnessing disproportionate opportunities in the renewable energy space.
There's not much disparity in the type of person that was receiving solar. It was one of those things that you could see the common trend very easily.
Ness now helps indigenous and minority communities in Wisconsin to build renewable energy infrastructure with an emphasis on intersecting cultural appreciation and economic opportunities. The Menominee Nation is working to achieve energy sovereignty by 2035. Part of that vision began with their Solar Elder Project, which was created to ensure elder community members are never without power during outages.
It makes more sense for them to have on-reservation power-producing plants and facilities that are also sourced from clean energy, and then for them to be able to reinvest into their own communities.
Community partnerships and grants have been a crucial component to the progress Indigenous communities have made thus far. Uncertainty looms on whether programs like these will be included in proposed spending cuts under the Trump administration. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Robert Chappell for Madison 365.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, temperatures in the low 30s and winds gusting to 25 out of the south. Winds continue to gust on Monday. They switch around to the west. We'll have partly sunny skies and a high near 45. Some sprinkles or flurries on Monday night with a low of 27.
It's 39 at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome RogerEbert.com film critic Mariah Gates for some Oscar talk, and entrepreneur Chad Franker joins the show to talk about a new program to combat loneliness.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, Wisconsin? This is Raised in Wisco on your Civic Media stations. Welcome to this Saturday's edition. Joel Clayfish here with the hostess with the mostest.
Oh, thank you.
Danielle Fairman. Danielle,
the most attitude, man. Or like, where are we going with this one?
Danielle, you've got such an attitude. I like to call it an altitude.
Aww.
I think you have an altitude. Of course, producer Jess is in the fishbowl.
Hello, hello.
Tom Nielsen is here from American Defense Manufacturing, and Ellie Mae Lawton. Tom Stewart.
Tom Stewart.
We did just meet. And just for the record, we just met. But I already tell I can like him. He seems like a great guy. Ellie Lawton is here, the chefferie, the French culinarian, who's going to have our recipe of the week, which I'm pretty excited about. This time in winter is a time to rediscover the outdoors of Wisconsin. Now,
yes.
I do not mean when it's 12 below and the wind is blowing at 20 miles an hour and you're freezing your ass off out there. I'm not talking about that specifically, but don't be afraid to get out in the winter. You know what I'm rediscovering this year?
What?
I'm rediscovering small game hunting.
Oh, are you?
I am rediscovering small game hunting because it is kind of the way many people get into hunting in Wisconsin.
That's exactly how I got
in. Squirrel, rabbit, crow is open. Now, I'm not a big crow eater, so I'm not a big crow hunter. You know how I feel about eating what you kill. So I'm going to say...
Uh-oh.
Let's not forget about the delicious trash pandas.
Yes. Last week we had the guys from the American Legion Post in Delafield who raised the money for the Legion, do some great work for veterans. And it's fantastic. And I have to say, yes, we all loved eating the raccoon at the raccoon feed. Not quite as much
as
Chef Ellie, which is kind of, I don't know if this is ironic. Is it ironic that the actual classically trained French chef likes eating the trash panda more than anyone else. Nick was in here and he was joking about the fact that she went back in line three times to refill her
12
plate.
Pounds later.
She had pounds of trash panda.
I'm still trying to work off the 10 pounds I gained from it.
Tom, have you ever had trash panda, as people call it?
Yes, I have.
What?
So the question is, have you eaten skunk?
What?
Since you were talking about the fridge.
No.
But my dad used to say, I have a saying, like, I'd rather eat the a-hole of a skunk than something else. So I did not know that people actually ate skunk.
Yep. When did you skunk? Eat skunk?
When I was a kid, my parents worked for Wee Energies,
okay.
And they used to have a wild game feed as part of a company event. So a bunch
nice.
Of the people that worked there were also trappers, so you would go in there and they had raccoon, muskrat, skunk, pretty much anything that you could think of. And, I mean... You cook it like a stew in a a crock pot. It all tastes good.
Nobody's going to know.
Yep.
That one kind of blows my mind. That takes me right back to Pepe Le Pew from the old cartoons.
Exactly.
And I never quite understood, I thought all skunks were French after that.
Aren't they? Always, wait, they're not?
Well, he was after, you know, the paint can spilled on the cat and he fell in love with the cat because he thought the cat was a skunk.
Yep.
But then when he came around, she wanted nothing to do with him because he was slightly odoriferous. But I guess, Jess, Jess is in the fishbowl and she's cackling.
Slightly odoriferous.
Well,
aren't we all sometimes?
I was going to say, on any given day, I am probably slightly odoriferous. And the slightly being the questionable word in that sentence. But one thing we learned last week is that really in Wisconsin, even during small game season, even during raccoon season, there is something to put on your plate. And while many people might have pause by that, pause from a skunk. I really would. But I guess
a matter how you clean it.
When you get those scent glands out of it, I imagine it's fairly similar to any other varmint we're eating, which brings pause to my mind in the first place, eating varmints. But I don't know. Would you try it, Danielle?
Oh, if someone else prepared, skinned it? Yeah. Oh, I absolutely will. I love trying new things.
Yeah, you would try skunk.
I would try skunk. Maybe some barbecue sauce too, but you know. Maybe.
what does skunk taste like, Tom?
Well, to be honest with you, pretty much everything that they had there was prepared in like a stew and crock pot. So whether it was muskrat, possum, coon, whatever, they all tasted pretty much the same from what I can remember.
Okay.
Would you try it, Joel?
You know,
you would. Don't lie. Don't even think about that. Everybody knows you would try it.
I would try it. Of course I would try it. I don't really have much of a mental block for anything food-wise. I mean, I've tried everything that people eat as a course of a meal. Now, there are two. I think there are different categories. I think the categories for whether you will eat something is, are you starving and would you eat it to survive? And in that category,
of course,
we've had discussions on this show about, you know, the alive situation.
Yep.
And we've had those. We've gone down that dark road before. So I would have to say, if I were starving, I'm certain I would be like, what is the best skunk I've ever had? The skunk's delicious. Oh my gosh, the skunk is so, I've never had such delicious skunk. Oh my gosh, skunky, but good. So slightly odiferous, but this skunk is delicious. It's got kind of a nutty flavor. No, that's squirrel. Never mind.
Bit nutty, Basil. So weekly Wisco.
Oh, let's do weekly Wiscos. I have a weekly Wisco, and I'm not going to say, I'm not going to steal Tom's. Tom and I are going to have the same one. I'm going to let him have his.
I'm part of that too.
And I'm going to say my weekly Wisco, the thing that happened this past week that I really enjoyed was the unbelievably beautiful snowfall we had. The stars were so crystalline that you could have felt like you could have picked them out of the sky. And while I loved, you know, ice fishing, and I did do some ice fishing this past week, which was great, and caught some decent fish, I also, when it was snowing, stood outside and just watched the snow, because it wasn't bitter cold, and it wasn't really windy, it wasn't drifting when it first started snowing. It was just a really pleasant, beautiful snow, and the stars were unbelievable. They told a story. So, you know, at risk of sounding a little soft, which I don't mind once in a while, I had a beautiful time watching the snow fall. How about you?
Since the weekend was Valentine's Day.
Oh, how romantic. Oh, that's effing precious, Danielle.
I got all dressed up and we went to Fishbones in Delafield.
Okay.
It's becoming my favorite place to eat. But then,
really?
Yes. The next day, we went with the Kettle Moraine Trap Team. SCI is a sponsor of them, so we went to go help set up all the booths at SCI.
Oh, that sounds fun. That sounds like it was a fun event.
It was actually really great seeing everybody there without the crowd and just talking to people. So
yes, that it was a fantastic event. I got to do it, and I emceed the auction on Saturday night, which is always a conundrum for me because I'd like to be bidding on the hunts instead of the one explaining the hunts and watching other people going to these fantastic places. But Tom, I want to get to you. First of all, American Defense Manufacturing, you are a gun guy through and through.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, you very clearly work for a company that designs parts and components and things that make firearms accessible and fitted to people, customize these firearms to people.
Correct. Yeah. So my background, I kind of, guns were my hobby in my life, you know, previous to coming to ADM. And then when I did a career transition, I started into the firearms industry and kind of takes it from there. So we make a lot of different mounts that work with many different firearms, and we actually manufacture rifles themselves in-house.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But I want to be clear, we're not just talking about a guy who plays, you know, plays with guns on the side. Tom is, thank you for your service, a veteran of the military.
Yes.
You had successes there. You were in the military for quite a while. Then you were in law enforcement, and I want to thank you for that service as well, which clearly in today's society brings with it a lot of different questions than it did several years ago.
Yes, it does.
So you have a history in careers that definitely have to do with firearms, and you found a way to, after that, kind of fill a passion or a love of yours and make it your third career, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so through the law enforcement side of it, after I went through my first sniper school, I kind of got into long-range competitions, and that kind of led through several different disciplines in firearms in the competition side, taking that to a rather high level, shooting around the country with Three Gun Nation and several other organizations as well. So that led me to have some contact with a lot of people in the industry. I started shooting at a sponsored level where I was getting either paid cash to shoot for different companies and use equipment or have contracts with different companies for sponsorship for ammunition or other products like that. That led into doing some consulting for a company which was American Defense Manufacturing, ADM. And then that led into me retiring from law enforcement and going and working for them full time.
What did you do this week that was awesome? What's your weekly WSCO?
Well, to avoid the 12 below we had last night, I cooked venison backstrap in a new way I've never done before. So I
that's it. We're expanding the cooking edition of this show.
Game I think over. I just got replaced, so I'm going to just go now. See you guys later.
Oh, you can still stay in the warm studio. Ellie, what's your weekly WSCO? What did you do this week that was interesting?
For once, I actually stayed inside. Well, besides taking care of the horses, I worked SCI. So I had a good time, saw a lot of folks. Yeah, it was awesome. Talked too much.
I can't believe that for a minute.
Never.
But people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, I guess.
Yeah,
Jess,
no kidding.
Jess, did you get out at all this week, or did you have some exciting?
Ooh, mine let's hear is it. Also the snow.
Oh. Great minds think alike.
Yes, they do. I shoveled. We have a
snowblower. Yes, you watched.
Okay. We have a snowblower, but I chose to shovel.
Well,
because I had spent too many hours at the soundboard. And the snow was just so beautiful.
It was.
And I just, not that I really needed an excuse to be outside and to enjoy it, but I took it as an excuse to be outside and just enjoy being in the snowfall and how absolutely gorgeous it was. And it was perfect snow for shoveling. It was light and powdery and beautiful.
It was absolutely an awesome snow, and we like them like that much better than the sleety stuff or the super slippery stuff right off the bat. I can't wait because now we've evidently got two cooking segments coming up. We're going to hear about Tom from American Defense Manufacturing. You won't believe some of the stuff he's shot and how long distance he's shot. And we're going to find out if Jess would eat skunk.
That's gone right in a world gone wrong.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived,
In the U.S., at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I don't need to talk. I don't need no shrink. I don't need to dance or hear what you think.
Wisco's your one-stop shop for everything in the great outdoors of the great state of Wisconsin. I am Joel Clayfish, and I changed my name to Clayfish so that we could talk about fishing and hunting on Raised in Wisco.
You're so amazing. Thank you for doing that.
Do you believe that for a minute,
Every
Danielle?
Single word. You would never lie.
I don't.
You would never lie to a pretty foresight. Little lady.
Danielle, you're so in left field sometimes. You're just absolutely out of your mind from time to time. It's a riot. If people ever meet Danielle and me, the beauty of we're drunk when we haven't had a sip.
Yep, that's exactly true.
It's certainly something, I'll tell you that. Tom Stewart's here from American Defense Manufacturing. Producer Jess is in the bowl. And of course, Ellie Mae Lawton, our chefferie, our French culinarian certified. We're doing recipes today. We're doing two of them because Tom has got a recipe. But we love having you along here on Raised in Wisco. We have had so much feedback from you, our listeners. You know, anywhere we go in the state, 21 stations on Civic Media throughout the state now play Raised in Wisco Saturdays at 11 a.m. We love having you along with us. Danielle, where else can they hear it?
You can listen to us on civicmedia.us and search for Raised in Wisco. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and you get to see our lovely faces on YouTube and Facebook.
Well,
yes, lovely.
I'm not sure that's a plus.
And our wonderful mug. Our wonderful hats that we have now too.
Yeah, these are pretty sweet hats Tom brought in for us.
Yes.
So appreciate that very much. Thank you. I want to get to the meat of the matter. We're going to talk to Tom. Tom is an award-winning champion accuracy shooter, and evidently
is that how
I
you
right
say it?
About that? I probably didn't say it the right
you're
way.
You're making it sound a little more dramatic than it is.
It's
have
pretty
you met
spectacular.
Me, Tom? Tom, have you met me?
Just now, yes.
I can't believe he said it so dramatically. Yes. So Tom has been working with guns in and around guns for decades as a former law enforcement officer, a former military member, and now works for American Defense Manufacturing, where part of his job is helping people use firearms safely and accurately. Well, part of his personal life, a large part of his personal life, as we were talking about before the show, is accuracy in long distance shooting. You've done some really wild stuff.
Yeah. So I think what you're referring to when you're talking about the long range stuff, the very first competitions that I got into shooting was what's called Palma shooting. So that you're shooting a 308 bolt action with iron sights and no support. You can only use what's considered called a swinging coat.
So for those of you who don't know what that means, iron sights are the little metal sights that come on a rifle. No scope. A scope is not iron sights. Iron sights are the little field goal looking thing at the back and basically a dot in the front, and you line them up, and every little twitch of your body, every different way you breathe affects that projectile, the bullet going down the barrel, and affects how it, where it goes down range. And remember, the slightest tweak in the barrel multiplies as it travels over distance, right? And you got wind to deal with, yep. And you've got curvature of the earth in some cases to deal with,
yep.
And you have gravity to deal with. That's mind blowing to me as a serious hunter who can shoot pretty well up to maybe 300-400 yards.
Yep.
We're not; those are chip shots compared to what you're talking about.
Yep. Yeah, with the pommel you're shooting, it's three courses of fire with it, or three rounds of fire. So you're shooting a series at 800 yards, 900 yards, and 1,000 yards.
That's insane to me. How can you do the iron sights at 1,000 yards?
So the
iron, that's just mind blowing to me.
Yep. So the iron sights that you're using, instead of being the normal kind of leaf and bead ones that you were describing, they're actually more of a target version. So they don't have any lenses or magnification in them, but it'll be a round circle, you know, kind of like a peep sight on the rear, and then sure. There'll be another round circle in the front. So you have a large black circle for your paper target that's out of 1,000 yards. So you're basically, your eye is lining up three circles. And kind of that way, you can kind of judge the distance and the
around. Here's what I'm excited about. Are you guys ready for this?
I've been excited this whole time.
I'm excited about this, and then we're going to get to whether Jess will eat skunk. Have you thought about it, Jess?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Oh man, you know what? One of the things that makes me so happy about this radio show is we drag people kicking and screaming, and some willing, into understanding the awesomeness of the outdoors of this state. You know, and Danielle and Ellie and I literally drag people into the outdoors, yes, to show them the experiences we have. And then we got someone like Jess, who knew literally zero about hunting, or, you know, very little about angling, about fishing, before we were magically, and there are no coincidences in this world, we were put together on this team.
Yes.
Now she's part of the talent of this team and runs the show from the booth. And she's just a willing participant in everything we've brought up. And it's so fantastic. And I've always talked about pressing the yes button. So I want to encourage anyone out there who listens and gets to glean the expertise of the folks we have on this show. Don't be afraid to say yes. Don't be afraid to try something. I'm really excited because I want to know what it takes, body and mind, to shoot at 1,000 yards with no scope on a rifle. And then what I'm even more interested is what you tell, or how you teach, or how you show hunters to become better hunters at 200 yards, 100 yards, 300 yards. And we're going to get to that because Tom is not just a long distance shooter. He's also a very accomplished hunter who's traveled many places in the world to do his hunting. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited. So first of all, give me a little bit of a glimpse into what it takes to be able to shoot iron sights at 800, 900 yards, body and mind.
So the biggest thing with that is just going to be fundamentals. Every time somebody thinks that they're doing something really high speed or something with shooting, whether it's being tactical shooting or three gun or doing long distance like that, it really all comes down to the fundamentals of marksmanship. As you bring that to a higher level, you're just able to add more variables to that, or more outside distractions to that, but still being able to execute those fundamentals. So it's going to
give me the fundamentals.
So a lot of that's going to be your body position. So are you, or have you built a body position so that you can support the gun without adding any influence or movement to the gun?
Just said a lot. I'm excited to explore that because I love hunting but I'm a hunter, and people say that most of the time what's unique here is that hunters are not necessarily shooters, and shooters are not necessarily hunters. We're going to talk about that crossover.
Yes.
We're going to have Tom's expertise as to how to become a better shooter while you are hunting. I'm very excited about that. This is Raised in Wisco. All I need to keep me from losing it is good cold beer and country music. All I need to keep me from losing it is good cold beer and country music. Good country music.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. In an email, Elon Musk is demanding hundreds of thousands of federal workers explain what they recently accomplished, and he'll take failing to respond as a resignation. Everett Kelly heads a federal workers union.
We will challenge every illegal action that's taken by this administration, especially this.
Musk says he's cutting government waste. Prayers for the Pope.
We're praying for his health and that he will be restored. But ultimately, it is God's will.
Pope Francis is suffering from pneumonia. The Vatican says the 88-year-old is in critical condition. U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff is hopeful Hamas will release all of the remaining Israeli hostages, including New Jersey-born Edan Alexander.
One of President Trump's most important objectives is to get all Americans home, and we're going to be successful in getting Edan home, I believe.
Witkoff on CBS's Face the Nation. CBS News Brief, I'm Heather Both.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers lose in overtime. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the number 11th ranked Wisconsin Badgers losing to Oregon 77-73. It ended a five-game winning streak for the Badgers, who host the Washington Huskies on Tuesday. Head coach Greg Gard.
That's credit to Oregon. We didn't attack the pressure. We got us to walk the ball up and play slower. So we'll learn from this and quickly turn the page for Tuesday night. But again, what got us in trouble was the completely kind of taking our foot off the gas offensively for whatever reason.
Baseball, in the first day of Cactus League action, the Brewers beat the Reds 8-7 thanks to a pair of home runs by infielder Vinny Capra.
I was just focused on the process. You know, I didn't have the greatest BP, and I just said I'm just going to go on to the game and try and do what I can and just focus on the ball, focus on the pitcher, and focus on approach, and just got to do what I can, and it ended up being a good day.
That's the Brewers' Vinny Capra. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, temperatures in the low 30s and winds gusting to 25 out of the south. Winds continue to gust on Monday. They switch around to the west. We'll have partly sunny skies and a high near 45. Some sprinkles or flurries on Monday night with a low of 27.
It's 39 at our studios.
The Badgers.
Seats Max, face the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fade.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Hey, can you blow up some balloons for Jack's party?
I can't. I'm so congested.
You need Sinex Saline from Vicks.
Sinex Saline Nasal Spray?
Yeah, just Sinex. Breathe.
Sinex Saline instantly clears everyday congestion associated with colds and year-round allergies with a gentle, ultra-fine mist that's no mess and easy to control.
Daddy, we need more balloons!
On it!
Enjoy life's important moments without congestion. Try Sinex Saline from Vicks. Just Sinex. Breathe. Use as directed.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Is going to show you how to be a better hunter, a better gatherer, a better angler, a better sideways banana rower. You know,
better at catching the danger noodles.
Danger noodles, trash pandas,
very important.
Ditch
do you know parrots. What a do you know what a danger noodle is?
I do not.
It's a snake.
I always thought they were called forest noodles.
They will forever be known as danger noodles.
You know, it's funny because Tom just said, sounds like you surround yourself with a lot of food, Joel. Is that not obvious, Tom?
For God's sakes. It's his favorite dish, Tom.
You're talking
Tom.
About it's my food's my favorite dish. You're talking to a second generation Italian American here. Yes, food is the vehicle of for around life, no doubt about it. So
I have a question right away.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say when I hear danger noodle, I think noodles.
Yummy
noodles.
So when we were talking about the last segment about being focused and understanding what it all takes to do competitive shooting, correct?
Yes.
Well, we were talking before the show that your daughter at 7 years old got into this. How in the world did that come into play?
Yeah, so there's several different clubs around that do it. We did it up at in Lodi, Winnequa Gun Club. They have a junior program there, so they have an air rifle program along with a .22 long rifle program. The air rifle program you can actually run right inside of a classroom. They just have traps for the pellets there, and it teaches them at a very young age some of the basic fundamentals of marksmanship. So they shoot from four positions. So they'll practice shooting standing, kneeling, sitting, and prone. And
what is prone?
Laying flat on the ground so that you have as much of your body touching the solid Mother Earth as you can to give the rifle as much support as you can. That is the most accurate way to shoot. And then as you lift up off of that through sitting, kneeling to standing, it becomes less supported and more in your body position and trying to do bone support rather than muscle support for the gun.
So what I'm going to give the folks listening kind of a picture of this.
Yes.
When you're prone, and I have to tell you, the longest animal I ever successfully harvested was 475 yards on a mountainside in the Austrian Alps, a chamois, and I was prone. I try to shoot prone all the time.
Yep. If you can, it's the best way to do it.
Right. I mean, and then if you've got a backpack in front of you or something to lean it on, that's your best chance of not, you know, of having that gun move as little as possible when you take your breath out and you pull the trigger.
Correct.
So what happens is every time you go from prone to a different position, you're adding moving parts of your body. We're talking about of your body.
Correct.
That are moving separately and differently. And I think it's interesting to me to understand that those little tiny movements make such a big difference when you do pull the trigger.
Yes, they do, because it's much harder to keep the gun stationary. Everybody can point the gun at the target and hold the sights on it. It's just a matter if you can maintain those sights being on the target as you activate the gun by pulling the trigger, because you're adding some more body movement and muscle movement in there, and you're trying to maintain the gun in a steady, continuous position. So that's where it comes into trying to build either outside objects, like you talked about, your pack to help hold the gun steady. Or if you're not allowed to do that, then trying to do it with bone structure support in the way you position your body to support the gun rather than trying to fight an uncomfortable position by holding in place with muscle.
Fascinating. Talk to me about breathing.
So breathing again, that's another thing that can add movement into the gun as you're pulling the trigger, which is going to move the sights off target by the time you pull the trigger and release the bullet from the gun going on the path to the target. So what you want to try and do is find a natural, comfortable place to pause your breathing as you do that fine, final sight alignment and squeezing the trigger.
That is fascinating. I've had people tell me that when you're doing this long distance shooting, you're shooting between heartbeats. Is that true?
Some people, yes. I mean, because when you really build a fine position and you get everything built in there, you can see your sight's movement with your pulse. I found when I was shooting long range stuff, I would get the most pulse movement in my sights from my cheek pressure on the stock. So I would have to adjust how much I was pressure to my face was putting on the stock, because as I was kind of get out of my normal realm and I would put more cheek pressure onto the stock as I was lining the shot up, I would get more bounce in the sights with my pulse. So if I would have a lighter contact pressure with my cheek on the stock, then that would reduce that amount of movement for me.
That's nutty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely crazy.
I don't think I can sit still long enough and not move. And
there's a lot of patience in accuracy shooting, correct?
I would say yes.
I would say like it's all patients.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot
95% of it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the patients comes into the practice, the training, and the preparation prior to it. Because that it takes a lot of preparation, a lot of practice, both with equipment and your physical execution of the shooting process to be able to do it at a high level.
And your daughter really mastered that, hasn't she?
Yeah. Yep. So she started doing the kind of the accuracy fundamentals, and then we moved from there into doing something that's called Steel Challenge. So that adds multiple targets and kind of brings the speed into the realm of it. So there you stand in a stationary position and you have five steel targets, and it's a timed event as how fast you can go through and get one hit on each of those steel targets. And from there, we moved into what's called USPSA, so that you have multiple targets, but now you're actually moving your body around a course of fire, going through different doors or around walls or different shooting positions to be able to see the targets. So that added a new realm to it. And then after that, we got her into three guns. So it's doing USPSA, so you're moving across a course of fire, having multiple different targets out there, but now you're having to manage three different guns during it with certain targets only being able to be shot with one type of gun.
And how old is she while she's doing all this?
She started three gun at 11.
That's crazy.
When you said that you guys were on a TV show as well, was it?
Yeah. When we were shooting the World PCC Championship.
All right. What are these acronyms?
PCC is pistol caliber carbine. So it's a weapon that looks like an AR-15, but it shoots a 9mm bullet. Gotcha. Pistol caliber.
Okay.
So we were shooting the World Championship for that. And,
Slow down. Slow down now. So your daughter made it to the World Championships of this stuff.
Yep, her whole family did, actually. I shot it, my son, who was younger than my daughter.
Oh, heaven's sakes. My daughter? No, everybody did, Joel. What kind of loser are you? For God's sake, man. How old is she now?
Right now?
Yes.
22.
She's 22, but she's 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, and she's competing internationally.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Mind-blowing again.
That is mind-blowing. I want to, and so did she, how did she do at these competitions?
For her age group, one of the years we shot the world shoot, she actually won it.
She was the very best in the world in her age group.
Correct.
That blows my mind. I want to talk about a little bit of a subject that might raise some hair on the back of necks. Do you think women are better shooters than men?
They are easier to teach, because I come from a firearms instructing background as well. They don't have, I shouldn't say they all, but the majority don't have the ego that mm-hmm. goes into it.
Yeah.
They are willing to listen to some recommendations and actually try them rather than go into it thinking that I know a better way than you.
I'm going to tell you something, Tom. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I think women are way better shooters than men. I have taken many men.
I feel like Tom's going
to
kind of
Tom's trying
the butt.
To say that. Well, look, okay. He's had a lot of training, Danielle. Yeah. I mean, you know, compared to Tom, you and I are at the bottom of the novice, you know, scale. Ellie, are you a good shooter? Are you a decent long distance shooter? Are you a decent rifle shooter?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm happy with my performance. I don't know
Never
if I would be okay shooting in front of this gentleman.
And heck, this is radio, so we're all as good as we say we are, right?
Can you teach us some cool stuff?
Sure.
Sweet. Oh, there you go.
I have a lot of ladies that would love to learn.
I'm going
to
tell you something about Danielle and Allie. They love roping people into stuff. So they love roping guests into stuff. So you're going to actually be out there helping us at some point.
Any day out of the range is a good day.
All I can tell you is this. I've taken a lot of people turkey hunting, right? Men and women, boys and girls, men and women, and hands down, the girls and women are more consistent with killing the turkey on the first shot than the boys and the men. A lot of times guys are just going, oh, give me that. You know, they're muscling their way through everything.
Exactly how they sound too.
Do they? Is that what we sound like?
Yep.
All I can tell you is when we went out with producer Jess and we were in the blind and she had the gun up, I'm sitting there. Now I've had the great fortune of bagging, you know, probably more than 100 turkeys with people by myself in every scenario. We had these turkeys marching in, Jess, and I'm whispering to her and she looks over me. She's like, shh. She's in the blind for the first time in her life. She's like, she's got her teeth grit. She's looking at me. You are gonna screw them up. And she,
well, you can just hold it. Hold steady. They're coming.
I've only known you for about 45 minutes, but I can 100% believe that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Here I thought Tom was going to come in here, and it was going to be maybe 3-2. For
Tom,
1 hour
stay.
Of my life, I thought it would be 3-2.
Nope.
Not a chance. And what I will say is, my experience has been that women have been better, more consistent shooters. Now, we're not talking long range stuff. I'm talking shotguns. But I've also never taken a woman deer hunting who hasn't hit the mark. Never once. And I can tell you that ain't the same with guys that I've taken, including myself. I mean, I've been within 10 feet of 4 turkeys and shot 3 times and missed all of them. But that
was the few times I've gone turkey hunting, coyotes come out, and we were Tom and I were talking about how you were doing competitive coyote hunting. Is that what was I? Am I right?
Yeah. Competitive coyote hunting,
right?
Coyote tournaments.
Tournaments.
Yep. Wow. Okay. All right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That sounds fantastic. Yeah. So, all right. Here's what I want to get to, and I want you to do. Accuracy shooting for dummies for hunters. Okay, I'm going to be the dummy, and I want you to explain what are some of the best keys that you can give to a hunter who wants to be a better shooter, a more accurate shooter. And I want to say this isn't just so you kill more animals. This is so that you're killing animals ethically as often as possible.
So I would say the number one thing that you can do without even having to be at the range, as long as you do it safely, is be 100% familiar with your equipment. So understand your rifle, how your optic works, how every one of the functions on that gun work, so that you can do it without thinking about it. Because quite frequently when it gets into the heat of moment, I've seen people forget how to work their safeties, how to do all kinds of other things with a gun. So number one is be completely familiar with your equipment.
Can I interject real quick? So when I was at Shields buying a gun that I won, one of the guys said, never, ever, ever dry fire. But then the guy that was putting my scope on said, you can dry fire whenever you want. So they got into a heated argument with dry firing. So if I want to dry fire my gun to
get the feel of the trigger weight, sure.
With modern guns, you are 100% fine to dry fire. Just make sure you do it in a safe environment.
It's a huge thing to know. Yep. And I just want to talk about what he just said, because as a person who is more of a hunter than a gun person, more than of a hunter than a shooter, I'll admit that, I've got, 47 long guns, 47 rifles. And I think what you just said, I have fallen victim. I want to take this one out hunting. Well, then I'm going to take this one out hunting. As you change that firearm in your hand, you really need to go through it several times before you're familiar with where the buttons, switches, hooks, and latches are on it.
Correct.
Before you go out there. Yep. I think that is a real, really great advice. So I'm excited to learn the other keys, but I think that to start off with, familiarity with your equipment is absolutely key. And of course, you know what? That's the boring part, right?
Yep.
Messing around with it till you have everything memorized, where it is, how it functions, understand the function of it, fire it ahead of time and all that. That's the stuff people skip. And then they expect to sit in a deer stand and get a great kill at 300 yards, which doesn't happen. And they wonder why. Familiarize yourself. I can't wait to hear the other lessons he's got for hunters to be accurate shooters. And what I really can't wait for is to talk about food. This is Raised in Wisco.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
That dancing moon is on the water. Do you feel inclined?
Raised in Wisco, your culinary show for the state of Wisconsin. Boy, sometimes it feels like that. And we've got a couple of great recipes. We've got Chefferie Ellie Mae Lawton, who is here in studio with us with a great recipe for this week. Our officially French-trained culinarian, Ellie. And Tom, we've got along with us today from American Defense Manufacturing. He's going to talk to us about a recipe he's got going today.
Tom and I made a plan, and we're doing surf and turf today.
Oh, I love that.
He's talking
idea.
Turf. I'm going to talk surf.
Okay. Nice. Perfect.
I like that idea quite a bit. Before we get to that, though, I want to wrap up what we were just talking about. And those are from, you know, Tom is a trained long distance shooter, and we're getting tips from him on how to be a better shooter when you're hunting in a hunting application. First thing, know your equipment. What's next?
So the next thing I would say to make this kind of a quick and to the point would be, when you're out there with your rifle, everybody goes to the range, zeroes it and shoots off the bench or sandbags or whatever. Do that to zero your equipment. Make sure everything's functional with the equipment. You're sighted in good, and then stop shooting off the bench.
Because
you're not going to be shooting off a bench rest when you're hunting. So you need to practice, find the spots that you're poor at and find out what works for you and how you can improve your shooting accuracy when you're shooting standing, sitting.
That is a great point.
Shooting off of your backpack and that kind of stuff. Because that's where you're going to get the benefits of finding what positions actually work for you and your body type and how you have your equipment set up compared to if you do all your shooting and you go out to the, you know, whatever gun club you belong to and you shoot your 20
that
shots off the bench.
All right.
You're that never going to shoot that way when you're in the field.
That is a fantastic point. Any more points for hunters? Are those two the two main things?
I think those would be the two main things outside of going through all the shooting fundamentals, which anybody can do a Google search and get those. So I think the key points to kind of tie that in was going to be the familiarity with your equipment and then getting off the bench and actually practicing shooting the way you're going to shoot when you're in a stand or in the field.
I think that's fantastic advice. Can we talk about food now?
Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. I get so hungry when I know we're going to talk about food. Ellie and Tom have got a surf and turf plan. You guys must have been scheming when I wasn't paying attention here. So Tom, why don't you go first? What kind of culinary delight did you make?
Well, I wouldn't call it a culinary delight. It was kind of a last minute plan. Yesterday when I got home from work, I took a chunk of backstrap out of the freezer and threw it in the sink with some hot water to thaw it out. A while ago, I got a sous vide kit as a present.
Love it. Love the sous vide. Love it.
Haven't used it yet, so I decided last night was a good time to try it. So I used that. I took some of the seasonings that I learned about when I was over in Africa. Had a couple of different seasonings that I'd never used before. So I
What?
So it was a peri-peri and a
bry. It's
salt.
Like a salt, bry salt. Yeah. Yep.
So I used some of that, and then I added some paprika to that with some garlic butter inside the sous vide bag, and then cooked it for about an hour and 20 minutes at 140 degrees, and then took it out and did a hot skillet sear on the outside.
Oh, that sounds absolutely delicious.
Yes, it does. I need that right now.
And I got to tell you, they in South Africa, which I've had the pleasure of being, it's amazing. They don't call it a barbecue. They call it a braai. They say, hey, we say, let's have a barbecue. They say, let's have a braai. So last time I was there, they sent me back with some braai salt. And I don't know what it is about that stuff, but it puts a crust on what you're cooking. It's fantastic. Ellie Mae, I see you over there. You got excited about his sous vide recipe there.
Yeah,
what have you
that.
Got for us?
I didn't sous vide anything, but I pulled the fish through the ice, if that counts.
So that definitely counts.
It's called a reverse sous vide.
In both cases, the fish is not breathing.
Joe liked that one.
Well, a reverse sous vide from the water to the air.
Could that be my dad joke?
That could definitely be your dad joke.
Okay, sure. So let's see here. I don't have a lot of time because Tom took it all up. I'm just kidding.
Finally, okay. She's after you, not all me.
Right. It's time to get serious, Joel. So bluegill.
Yeah.
Bluegill tacos.
Ooh.
I did not do them traditionally like fried. So what I did is heated up my cast iron skillet, put some oil in it, put the bluegill in there, did not bread them or anything before I put them in, topped them with a bunch of seasonings, cumin, paprika, garlic, onion powder, all the good stuff, let them cook, flipped them once, took them out of the pan, put them on some warm corn tortillas, made a cabbage cilantro slaw with honey, olive oil, lemon juice, cilantro, red onion, threw it on top, and I think, I had some pico, and that was it.
And a little
pretty quick
pico
and delicious.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing, though.
Yeah.
I do have one question on
I'm
that.
I'm down for the sous vide.
I'm down for both. That sounds like the most fantastic surf and turf ever. I just love fish tacos.
And if you need fish, take Danielle on the ice with you because she apparently can pull a lot of fish in a short amount of time.
Danielle, we never even really got to talking about that quite a bit. Danielle absolutely hammered the fish. That was so fantastic. We talked about it a little last week. But Ellie, my question to you is, you say some oil in a pan. Are you going to change the flavor profile or the flavor dynamic of what you're eating depending on the oil you're using and what kind do you recommend?
Yeah, certainly. Olive oil.
Olive oil.
I wasn't using a super high temp, so anything, a higher flash point, you want to use a different oil, like maybe a vegetable or canola.
Why?
Because it burns hotter.
Olive oil burns. Okay.
Yeah. Olive oil burns at lower temps.
Are you worried about it being a virgin olive oil? I mean, because there's a stronger olive taste, but I
like the stronger olive taste, so I tend to use an extra virgin olive oil for a lot of stuff. I know people have a lot of different opinions on oils, so you just kind of have to taste them beforehand and see what you like.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Tom, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And Danielle, one of the neat things about this show is that I get to host the show. Danielle and I get to host the show, and I feel like I learn so much every week from the experts who are able to come here with us.
I feel like Tom needs to come on another one. There's so many unanswered questions.
Tom has to bring his daughter.
Yes.
Because she's 22 now. I mean, that means a third of her life ago, she won a world championship, which is unheard of. Jess, we got to get her in here. That's for sure. Let's do it. Folks, You've been listening to Raised in Wisco. It means a great deal to Danielle, to me, to Ellie, and our guests and producer Jess, that you're part of our team and what we do here. We don't just say we care about bringing people into the outdoors of Wisconsin. We live it, we breathe it every day of our lives because this is the greatest state to live in the greatest nation, protected by people like Tom who've devoted their lives to making sure we are safe and sound in our beds at night. Thank you for coming along. We will see you next week where we're going to talk more about the great outdoors of Wisconsin and, of course, food. For Danielle Fairman, Ellie Lawton, I'm Joel Clayfish. We'll see you next week on Raised in Wisco.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll look back at the weekend headlines with our friend and contributor, Matt Flynn, an attorney and two-time chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information, and WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Elon Musk is demanding hundreds of thousands of federal workers explain what they accomplished in the last week. And if they don't respond to his email, he'll take it as a resignation. Musk heads President Trump's cost-cutting department. Everett Kelly heads a federal workers union.
I've had so many to reach out to me. And, you know, I'm so proud of this workforce, you know, because they are strong. And what they're telling me is that they're going to stand strong and see this through.
Republican Congressman Mike Lawler on ABC's This Week.
When you're staring down a $36 trillion in debt and counting, obviously something has to give.
This just in, USAID employees received an email today from the Office of the Administrator saying that as of midnight, non-essential direct hires globally will be placed on administrative leave. Those deemed essential will be notified by today at 5 p.m. Eastern. Prayers for an ailing Pope.